This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show. Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We usually look ahead to the games or preview the opponents for Clemson and South Carolina on every Friday, have somebody join us from the opposition to break it down. But of course, as we've been sharing throughout the week, we won't be on the air Friday. Got some Citadel basketball instead to focus on Friday afternoon. So instead, we get ready for the games the next couple of days. And for the Gamecocks, coming off that nice win against Florida, they now head to Missouri. Can't avoid what would seem like a classic letdown spot. On the road against Missouri, after that big win against Florida. Another winnable game. South Carolina needs to turn that Florida win into some momentum here moving forward the rest of the year. Joining us now to break down this week's opponent for the Gamecocks is Dave Matter, who covers Missouri for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Follow him on Twitter at Dave_Matter. He's with us now. Dave, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate the time. I was just reading about this game online. Saturday down south, they called this a must-win for Missouri on Saturday. As somebody who covers the program, do you see it the same way for Missouri with South Carolina coming to town Saturday?
Well, if Missouri wants to go to a bowl game, they've got to win two of their final three. And they get a really beatable Florida team next week at home, and seeing how they played recently and really how South Carolina just demolished them last week, I'd say that's a winnable game for Missouri. But then they finish up in a tough game on the road at Arkansas. And I think if you're Missouri, you'd much rather get a couple wins before you have to go down there needing a win against an Arkansas team that's kind of become Missouri's rival to some degree. And they lost a really tough game, a last-second field goal in Columbia last year. So the Hogs are going to be ready for revenge. So, yeah, I think if Missouri wants to play in a bowl, they better win this game Saturday and leave nothing to chance the final 2 weeks.
I liked this Missouri team heading into this year. I've had them, you know, maybe third or fourth in the East, not right now only ahead of Vanderbilt. Maybe that was me just overrating this team. When I look at this program, to me it seems like a disappointing year, but you know better than me. Having followed this team all year, how would you analyze the way things have gone so far for year two of Eli?
You know, if there weren't last year to look at, and if you would have just told me, hey, in year two, Drinkwitz is going to be kind of scuffling in November to get bowl eligible, I would have thought, yeah, that's probably to be expected. They're going to go through some growing pains. But they went 5-5 last year against that SEC-only schedule. They had some really impressive wins. You know, they beat LSU, they beat Kentucky, they beat Arkansas. They won that game at South Carolina, which, you know, I don't care how good the Gamecocks are or bad, that's a tough place to win. So the natural expectation was, okay, this is their trajectory. Is they're gonna take off? They're gonna be in that next tier of teams that can chase down Georgia and Florida in the East, and it just hasn't happened. The growing pains have been a little bit more severe than anybody could have expected. Their defense has just been so bad. There's no other way to put it. Now they showed some progress last week at Georgia, but they just haven't given the offense a chance because they've been behind so quickly in so many games. And, you know, they've gone through some issues. A quarterback now, Connor Bazelak, came into the year fully expected to be the guy, and he looked good the first couple weeks, and then he's been banged up a little bit. Now he's been out, and they've had to go to some freshmen. So it just hasn't really added up to the kind of year Missouri expected or the fans expected. But in hindsight, you know, last year might have been a little bit of fool's gold, and to think that you just automatically have a great season after going 5-5, that's probably not realistic in a place like this.
You mentioned the quarterback position, Connor dealing with the injury, didn't play this past week. Do you know, we're still only at Wednesday as we get ready for a game on Saturday, but any insight into what to expect at the quarterback position this weekend?
The media is allowed to watch a couple periods of practice on Tuesdays, and yesterday he was out there practicing. It's more of a walkthrough what we're allowed to see, so it wasn't full contact or anything like that. But he was doing everything that the other quarterbacks were doing. Drinkwitz said he really wanted to narrow down the decision after the Wednesday practice because he wanted to settle in on a game plan and didn't want to have, you know, all these different possibilities out there once they got to Thursday and Friday. So if Bazelak can't go, I would expect to see something similar to what Missouri tried at Georgia last week. They went with the two freshmen, Brady Cook, a little bit better passer, Tyler Macon, a little bit more of a run-first guy, and some kind of combination of those two. But if Bazelak's ready to go, you know, I think they may try him. And then if he's got a soft tissue injury, I think it's kind of a hamstring he's dealing with. If it's too tight, he's not able to play. Then, you know, you go with the freshmen and see what they can do.
You know, Vegas has, it's now even. Missouri opened as a 3-point favorite. Now it's an even spread. But when they opened as three, and again, we don't know the quarterback situation just yet, but you figure the three, home field advantage, so Vegas sees these two teams pretty evenly. For you, do you look at it the same way when we get ready for Saturday's game? Do you think these two programs, South Carolina and Missouri, are pretty similar on the field, or do you give an edge to one side or the other?
I probably would have said they're pretty even a week ago, but then just to see what Shane Beamer's team was able to do against Florida, and I know Florida has really been fading lately, and it seemed very dysfunctional, but there was nothing fluky about the way that South Carolina dominated that game. Missouri doesn't have a win like that this year. They don't have a game where they played that well, that complete, against a credible opponent. You know, they took Boston College to the wire. They took Kentucky to the wire. You know, but since then, against any decent competition, they haven't matched up at all. So, you know, I think just South Carolina is more accomplished at this point, not just because they have one more win, but they have a really impressive win against a decent team in Florida. So I'd say Florida, I'd give that advantage a little bit to South Carolina. But, you know, you guys kind of mentioned this. You got this looks like a classic trap game of a young program that is coming off of a big win, a big high, and you go on the road to a place, kind of a far trip. Missouri's sitting here really hungry to get a win. I think that kind of evens things out, and maybe the home field advantage is just enough of an advantage for Missouri.
Couple last things for Dave Matter as we get ready for Saturday's game. He covers Missouri for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You mentioned the defense earlier. I liked Missouri heading into this season, but I wasn't too fond of the Steve Wilks hire because I don't know if it translates from the NFL to college, first time as a defensive coordinator at the FBS level for him. My question would just be about the defense. Where has Missouri gotten themselves in trouble defensively? Because for South Carolina, they're coming off their best offensive performance. The fans feel good about Jason Brown taking over. So for Saturday's game, you know, where has Missouri struggled this year defensively?
They just haven't been super physical up front in the point of attack. They've missed a lot of tackles. They don't look very well coordinated. They look like they take bad angles. You know, they don't get beat on a lot of big plays, especially through the air. Now, they did at Georgia last week, but they kind of sold out to stop the run. They just don't function very well. And it's a fairly veteran group up front. You know, they added some transfer portal guys at linebacker and cornerback that I think have played okay. Their best game they played defensively in a while was last week at Georgia. They gave up a lot of passing yards, but, you know, they kind of held their own up front and did everything they could to limit Georgia's running game. So that was promising just because the bar had been set so low going into that week. But this is another challenge. I mean, South Carolina is really physical in what they did against Florida last week. I'd expect them to try the same thing and really challenge Missouri's weakness. It's another challenging week for Steve Wilks and his defense. I think you're right. The transition to the college game, I think it's a little harder than people might assume. And he sort of admitted that earlier in the year. He hasn't coached in college in 15 years. He's been in the NFL and a good NFL coordinator. But it's a different game, and you get less time to work with your players. And, you know, there's no free agency or anything like that. So it has been a struggle.
What would be I always ask whenever we do these each week, the X factor, and you may have already mentioned it, but for Saturday's game, when you're sitting down to maybe write the article afterwards, you know, what do you think will be the biggest X factor in this game to decide whoever comes out victorious Saturday?
Well, it's hard to get away from Missouri's quarterback situation. Either Connor Bazelak comes back, which I'm kind of leery to even think that that's possible, or one of these freshmen just kind of have a breakout game, whether that's Brady Cook, whether that's Tyler Macon, and they just do some things that can carry this offense and really complement Tyler Beatty. Missouri's got to get Tyler Beatty back involved. He's the SEC's leading rusher. He's had some really big games against, you know, so-so competition that has kind of stacked his numbers. But, you know, against Georgia last week, he wasn't really a factor because it's just so hard to run on them. Missouri's got to get him back being involved. And if he can be the best player of this offense like we've seen him be, then Missouri's got a really good chance because he is hard to bring down.
Last thing, let me put you on the spot. We're only at Wednesday. You said questions about the quarterback, but if you had to pick today, who do you think would win this game Saturday between Missouri and South Carolina?
Yeah, I usually do a prediction on Friday, and I give myself enough time, but I'm really struggling on this one. I'm not trying to take the easy way out, but I think these teams really are very evenly matched. For right now, I think I'll give Missouri a little bit of advantage just because it's at home. You know, I don't. Has Jason Brown played in a road game yet? Not that Missouri has this great, ferocious atmosphere. Fans here are a little. They're kind of waiting to see some results before they come out in full force. But I'll give Missouri a little bit of edge. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if South Carolina comes out and they play the same way they did against Florida. They control the line of scrimmage and they're the more physical, successful team. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Hey, I'm with you. And so is Vegas. It's a pick 'em. So these two teams are pretty even with one another. He's Dave Matter, covers Missouri for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Follow him on Twitter at Dave_Matter. Read his work this week to get ready for the game Saturday. Learn more about this week's opponent. Dave, appreciate the time and the insight, and enjoy the game on Saturday.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it, Dave Matter. Yeah, we usually do it on our football Fridays. We won't be here we will be here, but in a different way, doing the Citadel basketball game this time Friday. So, figured we'd catch up with Dave today to focus on this Missouri game. Plus, the big storyline is one that needs to be tracked now about the quarterback, Connor Bazelak, who I thought he'd play a little better this year than he has prior to the injury, but he's still a good quarterback. And on the flip side, the alternative is, you know, splitting snaps between two freshmen. So that's a big deal. For Missouri, they opened as a 3-point favorite. Now it's been bet to a pick 'em here, and we'll see what happens in the next couple of days. But I think that is a big swing in this game. That's a big difference which quarterback you get from Missouri. And in terms of Steve Wilks, I was wrong on Missouri. I thought they were going to be much better this year. And we talked about it there with Dave, but you go 5-5 in an all-SEC conference last year, first-year head coach, I figured, well, right, you figure in year two, they're going to be even better. So a winning season. They're going to have some non-conference games as well to get some easy wins. I liked Missouri to be about third, maybe fourth in that division. You know, I figured Georgia would win. I thought Florida would be better than they have. I liked Kentucky this year. And so I was kind of tossed. It was a toss-up for me who was going to be better, Kentucky or Missouri. That's how I had the top four. And then I thought Tennessee, South Carolina, Vanderbilt will round out the rest of the division. And right now, Missouri, they're only one game ahead of Vanderbilt for last place in the division. So they've been disappointing to me, but my one concern was Steve Wilks. And when asked about the defense, Dave said it there. They don't look very well coordinated. I don't know, Steve, but I don't like that hire from Missouri. Hasn't coached in college football in 15 years, but hasn't been a defensive coordinator ever at the FBS level. The last time he was a DC in college was 20 years ago in the Southern Conference. And Wilks had success in the NFL. He coached with the Panthers for a number of years. He was the defensive coordinator of the Panthers a few years ago. You know, a good coordinator in the NFL. But they are, even though they're both football, and even though the NFL is stealing a lot of ideas from college football these days, they're almost like two separate sports. College to the NFL, it's very different. So it doesn't necessarily translate. You think because you're taking a coach from the NFL, and that's higher up, right, that you, oh, he comes to college, oh, he'll be great. Right? He coached in the NFL. It's like when you grew up in a small town and you go away, you move out of town, and then you come back for Christmas or something or for a reunion, and everybody's blown away. Like, ooh, he moved to Los Angeles. He lives in New York City. And they're all blown away by that. And they think it's a big deal. And you're like, I've lived there for a couple years. It's not that big of a deal. It's not as special as you think. It's the same idea with coaches coming from the NFL to college. You think, ooh, he was a defensive coordinator for the Carolina Panthers. Now he's coming to the SEC. But the games are so different that it doesn't always translate well. And I did not like that hire to bring in Steve Wilks. You know, young head coach, needs a defensive coordinator. And he thinks, let's bring Steve in. He's never done it before. To me, that was a little too much of a gamble. Right, NFL coaches coming down to the college ranks, it's a different type of offense he's scheming for, he's planning for. You go up against Tennessee, you don't deal with anything like that in the NFL. Right, but you deal with it in the SEC. So it's just different, and it really hasn't worked out. That defense has been a disaster for Missouri, and I'm curious to see Jason Brown, who will be the starter, curious to see how he does in week two against a very vulnerable defense. He could play well again, put together another good performance. And for South Carolina, you get a win this week. you're heading to a bowl game. But you have to avoid that letdown. It's the classic. This is the classic spot. This is the writing's on the wall for a letdown. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But as Dave said, a young team coming off that big-time win. Now you go on the road to Missouri, another winnable game. And you have that emotional letdown. And you just don't play as well and lose a tough one. We'll see. I think it's a very intriguing game. That's why Vegas has it as a pick'em. Appreciate the time from Dave. We'll catch up with somebody tomorrow, yes, to talk about UConn football. Usually when it's a team like that, when it's such a one-sided matchup, I don't even bother. Right? When South Carolina plays Eastern Illinois, it's not even worth getting. What are we going to talk about Eastern Illinois? You know South Carolina's going to blow them out. But in this case, come on, it's UConn. So somebody I know who's part of the broadcast team there will join us tomorrow. We'll talk a little UConn football, but we'll really gear it more towards Clemson. What's the experience like for them coming to play Clemson? We'll break that down on the show tomorrow. Speaking of which, coming up, which head coach has done a better job this year, Shane Beamer or Dabo Swinney? Get to that. Plus, I got tickets to give away. So let me do this now because I got two pairs. So let's give away one of these now for the College of Charleston. Their season opener tomorrow night against South Carolina State. It's a 7 o'clock tip-off. You'll have to come pick up the tickets here at the radio station, but you have today and you have tomorrow, leading up close to tip-off to get these tickets today or tomorrow to go to the game. Two tickets to go see the College of Charleston at TD Arena tomorrow against South Carolina State, in-state matchup. All you have to do, be the third caller now. We got to give these tickets away. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. If you want to go see College of Charleston tomorrow night, be the third caller now. We'll give you the tickets. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, who's done the better job this year, Dabo or Shane Beamer? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Congrats to Andrew from Berkeley County getting a pair of tickets to tomorrow's season opener for the College of Charleston against South Carolina State. We'll be giving away another pair of tickets in just a little bit for that game tomorrow night. So if you didn't win, stay tuned. You have another opportunity. And on the show tomorrow, we'll have to give away tickets to the Citadel's game Friday, the College of Charleston's game on Friday, and the College of Charleston's game on Saturday. So we got a lot going on tomorrow because we have no show Friday, so we're going to try to pack two shows into one, essentially. We'll catch up with Lee Sterling tomorrow. We'll do our fantasy football preview for the weekend tomorrow. Preview Clemson-UConn. Supposed to catch up with Rob Kincannon as well to talk about the Stingrays. Throwback Thursday. We got a wrestling wrap-up. We got a lot. I don't know if there's going to be enough time in the day tomorrow to handle everything we got to do. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Dave Matter to preview South Carolina and Missouri this weekend. Since so often it loves to be called into question how I pronounce different things, Joe, how do you pronounce Missouri?
I say Missouri, but yeah. I do know some people who say Missouri.
Right, yeah, Missouri. Yeah, Missouri. Let's keep this simple. It's Missouri.
Yeah. Oh, let's have some fun here.
Oh, boy.
Okay, Bobby has gotten on my case for this before because of a sports minute I did about a year ago.
Okay. Doesn't forget.
Timberland High School out in Berkeley County won their opening round playoff game last week. They won 39-0 against a team from Archbrook. I think it's in Archbrook County.
Okay.
Okay. The school's name is spelled P-E-L-I-O-N. How would you pronounce that?
I would say Pelion.
Okay. Now let's see how fast it takes Bobby to get in here and give you the correct.
I failed.
The correct pronunciation.
That's wrong. Why? How did you say it? Did you say it?
I said Pelion.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Let's see how fast Bobby gets in here.
Pelion. That's how I would say it. What's the proper pronunciation?
I was going to see if Bobby was going to come in wind sprint in here and tell you.
Well, we'll find out. Yeah, I'm looking at it and I Googled it to make sure I had the right spelling. Yeah, I would say Pelion. That's how I would pronounce it. I couldn't even come up with a second pronunciation for you. I don't know. I saw online this was floating around a question about who's done the better job this year, Dabo Swinney or Shane Beamer. And at last look, the poll was about 92% in favor of Shane Beamer. Now, I think for Dabo, he deserves credit this year for, as I said on the show Monday, for his teams finding ways to win. I think for Clemson, they're just not as good of a team as we anticipated. And in college, you can hold that against the coaches because you're in charge of bringing in the talent. You know, in the NFL, if the team's just not as good as maybe we thought they were going to be, the coach can throw the GM under the bus and say, like, hey, what do you expect? You know, this is what I'm working with. We just don't have a very good team. But in college, it falls on the head coach as well because it's your responsibility to bring in those talented players. So I think that that should be a knock. But in terms of actually coaching the teams, Dabo does deserve credit for winning all these close games. We talked about this in the show Monday because, to me, that's the hardest part. The easier part is bringing in the talent. The harder part is then turning it into a some sort of winning team. Have they won enough this year? Have they won by enough this year? Of course not. But to be in this situation where they are, which was the surprise to all of us, but at a certain point you just have to accept, hey, this is who Clemson is. They're not as good as we thought they were going to be. And to still win these close games and come back in the fourth quarter, I do think deserves some credit. Meanwhile, for South Carolina, they had a big-time win against Florida. Prior to that game, and this is something that Dave actually mentioned last segment, Dave Matter, in previewing this matchup, where he felt a little different about this game a week ago than after seeing what South Carolina was capable of against Florida. Prior to that, though, you look at South Carolina, and it's a rebuilding program, and they won only two games last year, and it's a first-time head coach. But which win were you really impressed by? You know, it's funny how quickly things can change in a week. I mean, we heard from some Gamecock fans who were already tired of Shane Beamer. Then you go out and you beat Florida, and now I see this poll, and oh, what a great job he's done. So much better than Dabo. Up until the Florida game, I don't know if I was overly impressed with the job done. I think he was doing exactly what they were supposed to. And if you do your job, I don't know if I should be giving you credit for that. Right? It's like giving your kids credit for not doing drugs. That's kind of that's what's expected. Your kids should be responsible at a young age, not drink in high school and do drugs. I'm not going to go buy them some ice cream because they didn't do any drugs over the weekend. For South Carolina, they won the games they were supposed to. They lost the game. You know, they kind of did what they were supposed to up until the Florida game. But at the end of the day, you know, Clemson did have expectations of winning a national championship and had a win total of whatever it was, 10, 11 in Vegas, whereas South Carolina, we were expected in the eyes of Vegas to only win about three or four games. Potentially, they could go to a bowl game in year one. So from that sense, South Carolina certainly has had a more successful season because they have overachieved while Clemson is certainly underachieving. And I would give Beamer credit for that. But I don't know if it's as big of a gap, as sizable of a gap, 92% out of the 100% of the votes to Beamer. I don't know if it is that sizable because up until Saturday, South Carolina was really kind of just doing what was expected. And Clemson, while this has been a huge disappointment, maybe we just had this roster wrong. And to still be able to get some of these close wins out of this team, I also think deserves some sort of credit. Ask Dan Mullen. Right? The wheels have completely come off in Florida. Not the case at Clemson. That's why Ed O deserves some credit as well. I mean, they went out there and they almost beat Alabama this past week. Ed Ogeron's been fired for a couple of weeks. His team's still fighting for him. That goes a long way. Right? How did you act in your final 2 weeks when you put in your two-week notice before taking on a new job? Right? Were you really that motivated those last 2 weeks? When you're a player, and you're playing for yourself, these football guys always are, you know, if you're a college player, you're trying to get an opportunity in the NFL. If you're already in the NFL, you're trying to make sure you get an opportunity still in the NFL. That's why you don't really see a lot of tanking in the NFL. These guys, you have to go out there and play for yourself. But, you know, you're playing for an LSU team that has underachieved this year. Coach is already fired. I got all the other stuff going on, all the other noise around the program. You're still going out there and battling for him every week. So I think coaches do deserve credit for that. Once you lose the locker room, you lose everything. But in the case of Dabo, right, he hasn't lost that locker room. Ed O still hasn't lost the locker room. Dan Mullen seems to have lost the locker room. That's tough. That's tough to come back from. But I think for keeping the team together, for winning a lot of these close games, no, they're not going to match the expectations set forth preseason. And yes, Clemson is probably the most disappointing team in college football this year. But with that said, I still think you give Dabo a little credit for the coaching job he's done to still salvage some of these games, find a way to win some of these close games. Been an incredibly disappointing season for Clemson, but still within the vacuum of the games on Saturday, you know, to still go out there and win these games and how they win them still deserves some credit. Maybe not a lot, but a little credit. And for Shane Beamer, prior to Florida, same idea. I'd give a little credit. You kind of did what you were supposed to. Florida, you deserve some big-time credit for that. So maybe this conversation just changed over the weekend. I would say Shane Beamer's done the better job. South Carolina will have the better year based off of expectations than Clemson. But I don't know if it's as sizable of a gap as most people would say. Because up until Saturday, the Gamecocks kind of were just doing what was expected out of them. And I don't know if that's all that impressive to me. When you show up to work and you do what you're supposed to, right, does your boss at the end of every day say, hey, great job, you did exactly what you're supposed to. No more, no less. You did exactly what's expected of you. Eh. Now you beat Florida, that changes things. You make a big-time sale that wasn't expected, right? Now the boss will come over and give you some props. And that's what happened this past weekend with South Carolina's win against Florida. Up until that point, they were just kind of doing what was expected. Anyways, I saw that question posed online, and it was a big discussion online. I thought, that's pretty interesting. I don't know if I see it as big of a gap as most. We got another pair of tickets to give away. Let's do this now. So you have ample time to come grab these tickets either today or tomorrow. You can go see the College of Charleston start their season tomorrow night at the TD Arena against South Carolina State. Once again, we keep it real simple. We got to give these tickets away. Just be the third caller. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller now. We'll give you two tickets to the College of Charleston's game tomorrow night against South Carolina State. When we come back, my concern for the championship contenders in college football. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
My concern for each of the true contenders in college football after last night's college football playoff ranking. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Congrats to Gavin on James Island winning a pair of tickets to tomorrow's home opener, season opener as well for the College of Charleston. We'll be giving away more tickets on tomorrow's show for their games Friday and Saturday, and we also have some Citadel tickets to give away tomorrow for their game on Friday. So stay tuned for that on the show tomorrow. Got a jam-packed show tomorrow.
And, of course, the Cougars will be taking on the South Carolina State Bulldogs, who only lost by 8 to East Carolina last night.
Yeah, not bad. So. Could be a very interesting game tomorrow. Pat Kelsey's debut. Earl Grant won his opener at Boston College last night, beating Dartmouth. And then I saw the video of him dancing in the locker room afterwards, so that's good. You get to win your first game at a new spot. So congrats to them.
How do you think they'll do against Pitt?
Well, so they're the only team that was picked to finish worse than Pitt in the ACC this year. But I don't know. After watching Pittsburgh last night, I don't know how many games they're going to win. So Boston College certainly stands a pretty good chance. And that's not to take anything away from the Citadel because, again, as I said earlier, right? I mean, the worst team in the SEC in the ACC should still be the best team in the Southern Conference. But that is not a good ACC team in terms of their level, right? The teams that you compare them to in their own conference, that is going to be a bad Pittsburgh team this year.
But do you think this puts the rest of the SoCon on notice that this is not going to be their usual Citadel team?
Yeah. I mean, you hope so. That's when you start like that. That's what I said earlier. Not only to get a win like that, but on the first night, that's the first impression. Coaches, and I know from Coach Baucom always looks at the stat at the scores in college basketball. He's always checked all the time, seeing what's going on in the conference. So when those other coaches on the bus ride home or whatever at dinner after the game. In the locker room, you're checking the scores, and you say, whoa, the Citadel just beat Pittsburgh by 15. You know, that's a big – to start a year like that, that is a big time – it's big anytime you beat Pittsburgh, but to do it on the first night, that's the first impression of that team. Like, ooh, hold on. Wait a minute. We got to start paying attention to these guys. I was told, by the way, that it's pronounced P-Lion instead of Pelion.
Pelion.
Pelion?
Yeah, like you're peeling something. Pelion.
Okay, I thought it was like something Joe Exotic said, P-Lion.
And, of course, Bobby's not, making his way down here. No. Maybe he's having his surrogates contact you. Yeah. I did have one caller from Orangeburg County, and he said, yeah, it's Pelion.
I need a second E in there for that. Otherwise, Pelion. Taking of Pelion 123. That's what it looks like.
Oh, because Bobby just came racing into the WJ&I control room when I did a sports read, about a year ago. Uh-huh. So,
Are you from South Carolina?
Like, yes. It's,
you don't know how that, you know, how it's pronounced?
I'd never, you know, heard anyone pronounce it. Or if that's what they were talking about, I didn't realize that's what they were saying.
Right. I have the excuse. I'm not from around here. That's what happens. Like when a cop pulls you over, that's what you say. You make an illegal U-turn. Oh, I'm sorry, officer. I'm not from around here. I don't know these roads. Although now I have a South Carolina driver's license, so I guess that doesn't work anymore. Anyways, college football playoff rankings came out last night. As I shared earlier, you know, Cincinnati, everyone's battling more than Cincinnati has been. My biggest issue with the rankings, though, was the fact that they put Michigan ahead of Michigan State despite Michigan losing to Michigan State and essentially saying that it was more impressive that Michigan lost to Michigan State than that Michigan State beat Michigan, if you can keep up with that thought process. I don't get it. I think it'll all work itself out anyways, but in the meantime, it's something to have a little fun getting worked up over, because we always love to try to point at the committee and say how bad of a job they're doing. That was the one issue last night that I don't understand. I think the games need to really count for something, especially when that game was a week and a half ago and they have the same record in the same conference and Michigan State beat Michigan. They should be ahead of them. But with that said, when you look at the top eight teams, we started to get into this a little bit earlier. I draw the line at eight. The top eight teams to me are serious teams that could go to the playoff, could maybe win a national championship. After that, nope, sorry. Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, you guys, I'm not considering you. You're not going to get the job done this year. Biggest concern for these teams, for Georgia, as I got into earlier, I mean, I guess the quarterback position, maybe reading your own press clippings, daydreaming about what it's going to be like holding that trophy before you actually get to it. Those would be the biggest concerns for Georgia. There's not a lot to be concerned about with this team. And then in terms of more recently here, coming up in the smaller picture, would be Saturday against Tennessee. I really want to see how that defense does against that offense. It'd be a good test for them. For Alabama, who's ranked number two, they lost their center for Saturday's game against LSU, and then they proceeded to run the football for 6 yards. That's the fewest rushing yards Alabama has had since 1940. Now, last year, 87% of teams that had to replace their center, last year, 87% of those teams lost the first game with the backup. That is an important position that we probably don't focus on enough. But when there's an injury, when there's a change, something, the center, it's huge. And so for Alabama, all right, that was the case. Maybe that's a little bit of an outlier. Maybe they get better here moving forward. But something just seems off with this Alabama team. The defense isn't quite as good as we thought or years past. It's not quite as physical. Teams have been able to run it down their throat. And then you have the offense, you know, which when they lost to Texas A&M, the offense did its part. The defense, not so much. Then we get to Saturday against LSU. The defense certainly did its part. That's why they won. The offense, not so much. The offense laid an egg. Something just is a little off with this Alabama team where it's not clicking. Against Florida, only winning by 4. Losing to Texas A&M, only beating LSU by 6. Each week, there's like something that's just a little bit off. It's something different. This week, it's the defense. This week, it's the offensive line. Just something, they're not as talented of a team as maybe they've been in the past where they can make up for some of these shortcomings. And this year, those shortcomings actually expose them a little bit. Right? You can actually see the warts of this team. There's such something a little off with this Alabama team. I don't really know what it is other than maybe they're just not that talented, as talented as we're used to. I mean, they still have only lost one game, so they deserve credit for that. But maybe it's not quite the same like a couple of past Alabama teams. Number three is Oregon. You know, they beat Ohio State, which seems like a good win. But I also have some questions about Ohio State. More so within the conference for Oregon, they're in the Pac-12, right? So it's not a great conference, and their winning margin is just 9 points. They average to win by 9 points in the Pac-12. Not great. When you're in the bad conference, like when Clemson is dominating the ACC, they're blowing teams out. And you could say, yeah, it's a bad conference, but Clemson is blowing those teams out. For the Pac-12, we don't give that conference much respect. And so you say, well, they're the best of the Pac-12. Yeah, but it's not a great conference, and they're winning, you know, one-possession games. They don't seem to be that much better than the rest of the teams that make up a bad conference. Oregon has not been explosive on offense. They turn the football over too much, and 5 of their 9 games have been one-possession games, which, by the way, not only do they play in the Pac-12, I looked this up this morning. Based off of the metrics, they have the easiest strength of schedule in the Pac-12. So they're in... let's call it the fourth best. This year, I'd put the Pac-12 probably ahead of the ACC, right? The ACC's been miserable. So they're in the fourth best Power 5 conference. They have the easiest schedule in said conference. And yet, more than half of their games have been one-possession games. They averaged to win by only 9 points. So Oregon, for me, I have some concerns about, you know, how good of a team is this really? They don't have that firepower to beat you downfield, pull away, win big. And they could get themselves in some trouble when they play. It was a good win against Ohio State, but when they match up against some of these other teams in the top eight, I wonder how well they really truly match up. Which takes me to Ohio State, who's number four. I have questions about their defense still. And when they've gone up against, you know, some of the more talented teams on their roster or on their schedule, their defense hasn't always been that great. I mean, look at what Clifford did in Penn State. That was a real surprise. Even Minnesota to begin the year. Oregon. I was just telling you how Oregon's not very explosive, but they looked pretty good against that defense that day. And Ohio State's defense then dominated against Rutgers and Maryland and whoever else, the bottom of the Big Ten. But when they've played some of the tougher teams, you know, I still have some questions. On offense, they've been improved on offense, but the red zone offense still needs to be better. And they have just one ranked win. It was against Penn State, just happened, and they only won by 9, which was a surprise. They didn't cover the spread. I thought they'd blow out Penn State. They didn't. A couple of weeks ago, whatever, they won by 9, 12, whatever it was. You know, it wasn't as much as I thought. And then you had they're going up against Purdue this week after just playing a close game with Nebraska. Question being, or point being, you know, how good truly is this Ohio State team? The one time they've been tested, I guess two times. They lost to Oregon. They beat Penn State not by as much as they were supposed to. Those were their two ranked opponents. We'll see how they do against Purdue this weekend. The spoiler makers, as they call them. Cincinnati's number five. The obvious concern with Cincinnati is just, can they compete with these other teams on the list? But their quarterback hasn't been as good as anticipated this year. More importantly for Cincinnati, they play in the American. The last three teams they have played combined for 5 wins this whole season. And yet for Cincinnati, they've allowed twice as many rushing yards as they have had. They surrendered, they went up against Navy, and Navy runs the football at the option. They also allowed 300 rushing yards to Tulsa. So if your opponents in the ACC are more physical than you, if they're beating you in the trenches, what happens when that same group matches up against an Alabama or a Georgia or anybody from the SEC or even an Ohio State or a Michigan or a Michigan State? Right, that's my big concern for Cincinnati. Again, as I've been saying this week, everyone's pounding on the table for them. I don't know. Do you watch them? I mean, Tulsa's running all over them. What would an SEC team do when Tulsa goes for 300 yards? They're allowing twice as many rushing yards as they've had. What? Imagine if they had an SEC schedule. They're not even the most physical team or the best team in the trenches in the AAC. What about if they were even in the ACC? That's my concern with Cincinnati. Number six for Michigan, I think it's pretty obvious with them as well, the concern. Simply, can they get past Ohio State? Because they're going to have to if they want to try to go win a national championship this year or make the playoff. But more specifically, do they have the firepower to keep up or pass Ohio State? That's been the concern with Michigan really since Harbaugh has gotten there. It's about running the football, playing defense. And on offense this year, Michigan has 20 touchdowns, 18 field goals. That's not good enough. You got to punch it in the end zone more. Only 20 touchdowns. I mean, we're almost at Thanksgiving here. And they've had 20 touchdowns, 18 field goals. Half of their scoring possessions lead in kicks. They average, 2 touchdowns a game? That's not good enough. You go up against Ohio State, can you match up? You go up against an Oklahoma with the way Caleb Williams is playing. Even an SEC team like Alabama. Does Michigan have the firepower to keep up? Is their defense good enough to hold down the other team? I don't think so. Michigan State at number 7, my big concern for them is their pass defense. How about the fact that Michigan State has had a great year? They're number 7 in this poll, and I think that's even too low or high, depending on how you look at it. I think they should be better than 7th. But they have the worst pass defense in the Big Ten. Worse than Maryland, Indiana, Rutgers, Northwestern, any of these other teams that are struggling. Michigan State has the worst pass defense. They can't pressure the quarterback. And in the last two games, they've allowed over 550 yards in each. And now, as they move forward, and we're looking at Michigan State, can they, you know, win some games and get back into that top four? Well, their final three opponents this year are all top four in the Big Ten in passing yards. So these are some tough matchups for Michigan State moving forward. It's their weakness against these team's strengths to finish the year. And I don't think Michigan State has the quarterback to keep up. They got the running back, but if you're trailing, you can't run the football as much. And that's where Michigan State's vulnerable. And that's where they got in trouble with Purdue as well. Purdue had a good day through the air, and then they got a lead. And Michigan State, you're trying to keep up. They can't do it. They don't have that firepower. They're a classic Big Ten team, run the football, try to play defense, but their defense hasn't been as good lately. And especially when they go up against Ohio State, what Ohio State can do through the air. So my concern for Michigan State is just simply that pass defense is last in the conference. That doesn't have the makeup of a national champion contender. And then lastly, you get to Oklahoma, number 8. And this is where I draw the line. Anybody after Oklahoma, I'm not really considering you right now. For Oklahoma, 0 wins against currently ranked teams. 5 of their 9 games have been decided by just 1 score. And this year, going into the season, the thought was they finally have that defense to win a national championship. And I thought so too, but the defense still ranks in the 100s in yards allowed. And outside of the game against Texas, they have just 4 sacks in the other 5 conference games. So that's not good enough. Now, the offense has been better since Caleb Williams has taken over, and it's starting to look more like a typical Oklahoma team, you know, with that good offense, can't rely on the defense, and we've seen how that has gone in the playoffs in the past. So the idea for them this year was, hey, this defense is finally good enough to actually go win the national championship. Now that we've played 3 quarters of the season, I'm not so sure. They have figured out the offense with Caleb Williams. I don't know if the defense has been figured out or gotten to the point where it's good enough to be where they want to go. Those would be my concerns as we sit here 3 weeks left in the regular season of the college football season, looking at the 8 teams, the 8 that I truly consider as national title contenders, and what concerns me most about each of those 8. We'll wrap up your Wednesday when we come back. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you say.
Put a funky finish to your Wednesday afternoon here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And don't forget, you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com or listen through the TuneIn Radio app, your smart speaker, or our free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store, and you can listen that way from anywhere in the world. Also, the podcast available through that free app. Just search ESPN Charleston in the App Store or head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. The podcasts are available there as well. Appreciate listeners hanging out from at least 8 different states and multiple countries here on this Wednesday afternoon. Going to have a jam-packed Thursday tomorrow with all sorts of guests and football preparation for the weekend, because on Friday, it won't be the Morrow Midday Show. You'll hear my voice, but it'll be for the play-by-play of the Citadel basketball game Friday, which is going to be carried here on this station Friday because it tips off at noon. I can't do my show. We figure, well, why not just put the game there? So Friday, if you want to hang out, we can still do that with a little Citadel basketball. Coverage will begin at 11:30 on Friday. That means tomorrow is going to be a combination of a throwback Thursday and a football Friday as we get ready for the weekend. So we'll have a lot to do tomorrow. We'll be like Willy Wonka over here. Not enough time to do everything we're going to have to on the show tomorrow. By the way, did you see the story that a trash can from Myrtle Beach made its way to Ireland? They think that it blew into the ocean during a high wind storm, and it made its way all the way across the Atlantic Ocean and came ashore at County Mayo, Ireland. How about that? That's interesting to me. So take that, Ireland. You can take out our trash from Myrtle Beach all the way to Ireland. Showed up on the shore. Kids were taking photos with it. They were blown away. Like, wow, this is what trash looks like in America. And now they're writing articles about it. Trash can made its way. I don't know what if Ireland's going to return said trash can to Myrtle Beach, but there you go. If you ever miss anything from the show, of course, you can always catch it on demand. We got the latest college football playoff rankings last night. My biggest takeaway was just that Michigan should not be ahead of Michigan State, and we got into that throughout the afternoon, plus Cincinnati. Everyone's fighting for Cincinnati, but as I've been saying all week, right, you're like the parent who cares more about your kid's athletic career than they actually do. And you're going through all the trouble, and you're yelling at the coach about the playing time, and you're not there at practice to see the kids sitting around, you know, picking flowers, not has no interest in playing baseball or soccer. And you're the one that's pushing it when really they're not the one doing their part. Similar to Cincinnati. All these people that are pushing for Cincinnati to be in the playoff, have you watched the way they've played the last couple weeks? Because they haven't been doing their part to put themselves in the playoff field. And yet they're still 5th in the rankings, so they're just on the outside looking in. And most importantly, college basketball tipped off last night. It was a crazy night. highlighted by the Citadel's win over Pittsburgh, their first against an ACC team since 1979. Big-time win for the Bulldogs. We'll give away tickets on the show tomorrow to the Citadel's home opener on Friday, as well as the College of Charleston home games for Friday and Saturday as well. A lot to do tomorrow. Looking forward to it. Find the podcast if you ever miss anything from the show. ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again tomorrow at noon. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.